This is episode 70 of the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops with James Ealing. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.ciaops.com/publications. There you will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Resell options are also available. All of this is available at www.ciaops.com/publications. Welcome along to yet another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, I'm joined by James Ealing. James, welcome.
Hi, Robert.
Good to have you along. As we always do with this podcast, what I'll get James to do is just intro himself, who he is, what he does, and where he comes from. So, James, if you could do that for us.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the Managing Director at Extreme Networks. We're an IT company based down on the Mornington Peninsula in sunny Victoria. We employ about 18 people and we do a couple of things. The main things that we do is we provide an outsourced IT department for local businesses around the Mornington Peninsula. And also we provide a lot of services to help small businesses take their business online, a lot of online marketing, online strategy, the higher level stuff, and then integrating it all into their business processes. So that's pretty much us.
Cool. And how are you finding business at the moment?
Booming. There are significant structural changes that are affecting small businesses a lot now. So some industries are big winners, some industries are big losers, and a lot of businesses are now scrambling and playing catch up to try and take their business online. So, and that's pretty much our main lead generation tool for our IT services business as well. And yeah, like we're literally really busy. We're hiring two people at the moment.
So how are you generating the leads you mentioned online? I mean, how are you getting those leads in? I mean, what's you finding most effective?
Online marketing.
Okay, so a bit more specifics for people out there. What does that mean?
So we use an integrated strategy. So we've got an email list that we send out to prospects just to keep them aware of the kind of things that we're doing. We actually do quite a bit of Facebook marketing, which I know is a little bit unusual for IT companies, but it's an incredibly rich database. And it's interesting that we ran a series of interviews for network engineers this week, and we interviewed 7 candidates. And so we did what we normally do, which is put an ad on Seek. And I've always struggled with that because the quality can be quite variable, and I'm never, there's a lot of random candidates that don't fit what it is that we're trying to do. We ran a Facebook ad to drive people to the Seek ad, and 6 of the 7 candidates and all of the top 3 were driven to Seek by the Facebook ad. So literally we were driving, we spent, I don't know, $30 on advertising an ad on Facebook, mm-hmm. and we paid $400 for the Seek ad. I'm wondering if we probably won't use Seek anymore. We'll just do Facebook advertising for positions in future.
Interesting. So I think, again, it's a good indication of, like I said, the paradigm change that we're seeing with the online. Now, one of the things I mentioned in a previous podcast is you know, we'll be probably releasing this after the Christmas break, but I have been pleasantly surprised by the efficiency with which many of my Christmas purchases have ended up at my doorstep. So again, ordering it via e-commerce, you get tracking, you get, you know, follow through, you can see when it's delivered, you can almost follow the truck as it drives along the mapping website. It's amazing how efficiently some businesses are really using this. You know what, from my point of view as a customer, I find that really, really enticing. And you know what, I'm going to probably go back and use that source again and again, because it's really made me comfortable and kept me up to date with what's going on. So again, something that simple, and in your case, you know, Facebook ads versus the traditional Seek advertising is getting great returns. So it is very interesting, as you note, that the people who are making advantage of the online stuff versus those who are still really struggling is to try to understand the whole thing.
Absolutely.
All right, so what we've asked James to come on and speak about, given his experience and background, is something that I think is happening a lot in the industry, and certainly I see it from my point of view, is the mergers and acquisitions. So what we're seeing is a lot of businesses are obviously growing or whatever, they're needing resources, other businesses are potentially struggling or not knowing what to do. So there seems to be a fair rash of this rationalisation, I suppose, if you want to call it. Is that what you're seeing out there in the environment, James?
I think it's starting to pick up. I think there's a lot more people, particularly in the smaller businesses, who are becoming increasingly interested in some sort of merger. And I was thinking about it this morning. Running a small business is a lot harder than it used to be, you know, 15 years ago when we started. We did a little bit of Yellow Pages advertising. Our first non-Yellow Pages advertising was, our corporate color back then was yellow. So we went to, it wasn't Officeworks. Officeworks wasn't around then. We bought reams of yellow paper and we printed out on a HP 6L printer, I think, just a black ad of the services that we did, and we had them mailed out to a list of prospective customers. Now, you can't do marketing like that anymore. Well, you could, but I don't think it'd be very effective. So the amount, like we've got a full-time marketing person. So the kind of resources that you need to be able to run a business now is much more complicated and difficult to get, particularly if you're a company with only three or four people. So I think that's one of the big drivers, is that they're becoming increasingly less profitable. Then you've got things like cloud, offshoring, the baby boomers, like all of them are getting, you know, to retirement age and wanting to sell their business. So all of these factors are making it very interesting to try and, you know, work out what your exit strategy is.
Okay. So, I mean, do you think that there's also the factor that, you know, business hasn't worked out the way that people are thinking? I mean, are there any, you know, are there any particular industries that you think are facing this challenge more than others and some that may not? Can we define it down to a vertical? Does it depend on the business owner? Is there any commonality, I suppose, is what I'm asking here?
Well, I think, you know, I look at things like, so retail, the value of retail businesses has collapsed because of the fact that retail is one of those industries that's really struggling. In IT, I think that we've got specific issues. The profitability has changed. I remember before we started Extreme Networks, you know, people would sell a computer and offer free installation. Now that's changed, you know, virtually to people are selling hardware at a loss just to be able to try and pick up the services. But I think a lot of the services, like I'm fairly pessimistic about the MSP business. I think that the pricing that you can charge for that is under massive pressure, with people who just really, you know, when you've got 1,000 or 2,000 seats, you can get a whole lot of automation, even offshoring as well. That means that there's not a lot of profit to be had in it, because there's a lot of, it's basically become a commodity product. And once again, I know that the biggest thing that brought this home to me was we received an offer for Extreme Networks probably about 6 years ago. And the multiple of revenue that we were offered back then, the amount that we were offered back then is about half of what Extreme Networks is worth now, and Extreme Networks is twice as big as it was then. So the value of an IT business has decreased by 75%.
And from my point of view, it's very interesting. I certainly agree with you that the MSP model is a very limited time frame, and I think it's, you know, decreasing much more rapidly than people think. But what I've seen in my travels is that so many customers now look at an MSP model and say, why am I paying for this? I could do this myself, or I can buy a new computer cheaper than I can pay to maintain it. So rightly or wrongly, again, given the financial pressures we're under on the economy also, I'm seeing a lot of customers reevaluate this and sort of saying, why am I paying a cost for this? And I actually know a few providers who are actually using this as their business leverage to go into a business and say, oh, you're an MSP model. If we go back to a casual or break fix or as required service, you are going to save a whole heap of money and get a whole lot better service. Now, what they've found is that the business that's running the MSP started out with somebody who was doing the break fix. They had direct contact with the client, with the provider, they're very friendly, and then the provider came in and sold them the MSP model. They went that as much to support that provider, and then what they've found is that over time the services decrease, more and more remote stuff, less and less contact with the business principal, to the point now where they feel totally forgotten, but they're paying a significant amount of money. So again, I think that the MSP model can be done, but there's just not a lot of people who are doing it well out there.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I love hearing people talk about what they're that they're on an MSP, and I got, because I explain to them how it works, I explain to them the limitations with it, and sometimes they tell us, you know, what they're paying per month, and it's like, wow, you know, I would aim to decrease that by 50%, and automatically, like, they feel that they're being ripped off, because in a lot of respects, they are. And, you know, by leveraging a whole heap of things that we've developed, customers are able to be more empowered with their IT, have it more closely aligned to their business plan, and they're paying a lot less for it.
So do you think that what's effectively happened is perhaps that IT has effectively become mainstream, you know, like the car or electricity or whatever? It's become so common across so many businesses, and there's so much information available to it. And the other thing is people who are coming into the workforce today are generally pretty IT skilled. They've grown up with it, they understand it. Is that sort of the fundamental change that we've seen?
I think, yeah, definitely. I know that, like, we can get a site with, you know, 20 or 25 users down to, you know, 3 or 4 hours a month, most months, because there's someone there that you can stab to be the IT person, and they can do most of the level one support. You know, it's a lot quicker for the customer, it's a lot cheaper for the customer, and, you know, and that's a model that they really like, and that really sort of undermines the whole MSP type thing. We come in and provide level two, level three, and it's sometimes, you know, overflow level one support. It means that there's a lot less revenue per customer, but, you know, that that's what the customers want. I mean, small business is generally tight. You know, some of our customers have got Band-Aids on their networks. Some of those Band-Aids have got Band-Aids on them. So you need to be responsive to what it is that the customer wants. And I think a lot of people have been lazy in that, like, IT, I really love what IT can do for a small business, but I don't like servers and I don't like desktops, and all of that stuff's boring and it doesn't make people money. It doesn't save them time. Too many IT companies focus on servers and switches and routers and firewalls, and that's, like, no one wants that. You know, it's like accounting. It's exactly like accounting. You know, I'm dealing with an accounting issue at the moment, which is it's a massive part of our cash flow, but it's taken me 5 months to do it. Literally because I just don't like doing it. It's boring and it's not growing the business.
Well, I think also too, part of it is that the traditional people you're talking about are focused on the hardware, the software, and that's great technically. I love, you know, playing with this and it's amazing stuff and all that. But you know what? Like I said, is the end user needs to get a PowerPoint presentation out, needs to get a document done, needs to do, you know, create some result using the technology. They don't care how it happens, whether it happens on a laptop, whether it happens on a tablet, whether it happens on a web browser. They just want the end result. So I think that what's happened is that's what's been lost sight of. The MSP model in theory was designed to take the worries about the infrastructure away so that the end user would then be free to achieve what they need to achieve. But I think then that has created this gap, which the people, you know, the MSP type resellers haven't gone in and said, okay, this is how you use Excel, or this is how you create this result, or we can help you develop this or get this end result. I think, unfortunately, they're focused very much on, like you said, the very boring stuff, which means nothing to a customer.
Absolutely. And because that's become commoditized, there's no value in it. You know, you're literally just competing on price, and you know, anyone can do it.
I think one of the most interesting things I've seen is you know, a couple of months ago, a while ago, I had a bit of a revelation when it comes to Azure and finally getting an understanding of that. And now that I can express that understanding to other resellers, you can see basically the look of horror or the look of surprise in their face when they actually go in and use something like the Azure platform to spin up a virtual server or a virtual machine, which would take them normally hours to do on-premise. It's like you see that realization, and then you can see their whole, to an extent, their business model being severely challenged by the fact that people like Microsoft, Google, and Amazon are bringing these sort of products to market that now allow, you know, an end user, a skilled end user, to be able to produce that and to get the result they want. And I think that's where we're seeing a lot of this challenging and all that sort of stuff, because you're right, you know, the boring stuff is being looked after by effectively the utility companies like electricity. And unfortunately, a lot of people have missed this, well, or ignored or whatever, denied this, and now it's now coming to fruition, especially under cost pressures that we see in the economy. And now they look at it and you've sort of got to go, well, what's my business model? I can't scale up, and how I'm charging this. And then typically what I see is you have a situation where maybe your largest customer, MSP customer, leaves you for a pricing or whatever, and all of a sudden you go from being relatively comfortable to really struggling because you've suddenly lost this huge whack of revenue from your business, and you sort of go, oh, geez, what do I do now?
And then you realize that you want to sell a business.
Exactly, and then that that's yeah, you've lost all this value, and all of a sudden we've got, oh gee, wouldn't it be a good idea? Maybe I should think about selling this business. I think I remember one of the best presentations I've ever been to at a conference is that before you even start a business, you need to work out how you're going to get out of it or what you want out of it. I think that was a bit of a revelation to me, because you just got into business. I could do work better than my bosses, and I can, you know, build it up. And you never stopped and sit down and thought, you know what, what's the end result here? What am I going to do? I can't necessarily work in this business forever. And I think, again, people just see it as, you know what, in that case, it ends up, you've just bought yourself a job effectively. I mean, you know, is that a fair comment?
Look, absolutely. And I think we started Extreme Networks so that we could retire early and have a comfortable lifestyle. It was, you know, we put all of the extra hours and work, because, you know, running an IT company is no different to running any other type of small business. It's a huge amount of work. You've got a lot of issues around, you know, compliance, cash flow. You've got to be an expert in all of these other things that you don't need to worry about when you're just an employee. So you've got all of these added burdens. And the only reason that you do that is to have, you know, generally, you know, you want to build up something that's of value that you can sell. And that's that is the thing that made us, you know, dramatically change direction probably 2 or 3 years ago, because we realized that our nest egg was going to shrivel up and die. And, you know, by the time we get to the age that we kind of wanted to retire, it probably won't be worth, you know, anything. And, you know, that's a really soul-destroying kind of thing when you first come up with that revelation that everything that you do, the whole reason that you go to work, you know, technology is changing that. You know, and you're losing money, you know, thousands of dollars every week if you look at the change in market value of a small IT business over the last couple of years. You're losing thousands of dollars of capital every week, and it's like, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think,
and that's why. Yeah, sorry.
No, I was going to say, is that where does where does the issue lie? Is it the owners aren't skilled? They're technology people, or they're too busy trying to make ends meet? You know, why is this skip past people? Has it just been too difficult to understand? I mean, in your opinion, why is, if this is happening, and you know, I mean, I agree with you 100% and see this going on, is why we still see people who deny it or don't recognize it or are not taking action, do you think?
So there's two things that I think that you need to do in IT, in running a small business. You need to be good tactically and you need to be good strategically. Tactics is doing things right. Strategy is doing the right things. And, you know, there's no point being the best small business IT company if that market is dying. And it's like being, you know, people talk about buggy whip companies. You know, when everyone had a buggy, then making buggy whips was an awesome business. But it doesn't matter how good they are now, you know, no one buys buggy whips. So there is no market for it. There's no businesses that in that industry. And you need to be, I think you always need to be looking ahead of where you're going to be in 5 years' time. And that's what happened probably at a, you know, I tell this story, you know, probably about 4 years ago at a Microsoft conference. And Tina came out and said, oh, I don't understand this. Tina's my wife and partner. She said, I don't understand. The cloud's coming and everyone's cheering, but isn't that like we're not going to be able to sell servers anymore? And it was like, exactly. And I don't think that anyone really back then was thinking, what is this going to do to my business? Now that it's, you know, the tsunami is well and truly, you know, upon us, a lot of people are kind of struggling with, what do I do now?
Okay,
And
so I go on.
to make a big strategic change in your business, like literally, it's taken us years and we've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's not an easy thing to do. Our company's, you know, we've got 18 people, so you know it takes us a little bit longer to turn the ship around, to change direction. For a smaller company, you know, you've got a bit more agility, but it's still a very difficult thing to do because you need to change your mindset, you need to change your customer focus, you need to change your skill set. There's a whole, you basically you've got to redesign the business from the ground up.
So, I mean, we're talking about, you know, mergers and acquisitions here, but do you need to get that right before you start looking at mergers and acquisitions, or can you go down the M and the A path with the hope that, you know, you'll be able to onboard that? I mean, is it better to, like I said, get your house in order and then look at this other stuff, or do you need to be doing both? I mean, what makes sense as a strategy here?
Well, I think it depends on what kind of exit you want. I mean, there's some people who are just really keen to get out of the industry. And so they will take the price that's given. If you can build significant revenue around other models, then the valuation changes for the business. So if you're not just a straight MRR, MSP type business, then, you know, the valuation multiple changes. I think, but I've seen multiple deals where people have basically just, you know, sort of walked away from a business for, you know, less than a year's worth of MRR just to get out of the business. And, you know, so that's not a lot of money at all.
Well, I think also to the one of the points that I talk to and mention to people is that you might have to get out of your business for a reason that you never thought of. You may have financial issues, you may have, you know, personal issues, you may have you know, health issues. You may have to exit that business quickly for some unexpected reason, and again, that can come upon you in a blink of an eye, and again, that's where you've built up this nest egg, and you end up, you know, if you have to sell it in a hurry and you haven't got your house in order, then you're not going to get that value. So the example that I have is I know a person who was a largest MSP, and a smaller MSP came wanting to sell that because he had a, you know, a personal situation he had to deal with. He wanted, say, $150,000 for his business a number of years ago. The larger MSP looked at it and said, well, you've got no contracts, nothing in order, there's no guaranteed revenue, it's all random stuff, basically. Nothing's in paper, nothing's documented. And that business, the business owner wanted $150,000 for it, and he sold out for $5,000.
Exactly. You know, and that's the sad thing about it. One of the other factors that I see so much in small business is people are just burnt out. It's an incredible grind running a small business. And if you're not mega passionate about what you do, then you're going to come to work not wanting to come to work. And I always think, you know, who is going to want to come to work when the boss doesn't want to be there? You know, like it's very hard to build a culture and to build enthusiasm and excitement when everyone can tell that you don't want to be there. And, you know, that's why, you know, as we've transformed, we hit a whole heap of new challenges and we literally are doing things that we've never done before, but that's exciting. And everyone can see, wow, you know, we're doing something, you know, hey, we would never thought, like this week we're running a competition for a large company. With a significant viral component, and their web server wasn't going to be able to handle it. So we actually spun it up on Azure, and we've actually got up on the wall the number of people in real time hitting the website. And, you know, we peaked at about 190 people on the website within the last 30 seconds, which is that's a fair amount of web traffic.
Well, I think also too,
they're the kind of thing.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, they're the kind of things that are exciting. You know, we would have never bothered about that. We would never have done that 2 years ago. We never had the capability to do that. But now we can spin up Azure instances. Now we can create a marketing campaign that has a significant viral component in it, and you know, create a lot of value for big customers.
So there are two issues here. You mentioned the burnout. Now, is the burnout because, you know, I've started the business for the wrong reason, or it's because perhaps I'm trying to do too much, or I'm doing, you know, the wrong thing? You know, is that what you're seeing is the reason? Obviously, everybody starts out with the idea of being bigger than Bill Gates and do all that sort of stuff, but somewhere along the line it gets beaten out of them, I suppose. Is that, again, because they've gone too broad? I mean, what's your feeling on why people are burning out?
Well, I think it's all of the above. I see people who, you know, struggle managing a team, and, you know, you need to build a team if you want to scale up in a lot of respects, you know, particularly in an MSP type business. There's people who struggle with that. There's people who struggle with the lack of profitability in the industry, because in IT, there are, you know, some companies make a lot of money. Generally, they're not MSPs though. Because, you know, the secret sauce isn't that secret. You either, you know, there's not many differentiators. You're either using LabTech or Kaseya, probably. It's really hard when 50% of the market of your competitors are using the exact same software tools. You know, it's hard to differentiate that. So there's lack of profitability. There's the day-to-day issues of dealing with customers, lack of skill set. You know, far too many people underinvest in their own education. You know, you need to, like, I think you need to have an understanding of strategy. So where do you go out and find that? You need to have an understanding of marketing. Where do you go out and find that? You need to have an understanding of finance. Where do you go to find that? Too many people just delegate that out. And if you honestly ask, how much do you care about one of your customers' networks? Is it as much as you care about your own? And then you spin that around and you think, you know, my accountant, how much does he care about my books compared to his own? The marketing company, you know, their marketing versus yours. You need to have a working knowledge of those areas so that you can make sure that you're getting the right services. And that places a huge amount of stress on a small business. If you're a business of five people, where do you get that domain expertise? And if you don't, then, you know, you're going to struggle.
Well, again, I think, like I said, you know, the thing is most people, especially in the IT industry that we know of, have come, they're great technicians, they've worked in a business, they were the lead technician, the most, you know, the smartest technical person in the room, and then obviously they've, you know, I go out and do this on my own, created my own business, and things have gone well during the good economic times, and they've done all the basics, and now, you know, the tide's turned, it's become commoditized, there's more people in the market, they maybe haven't kept up their skill sets, as you've noted, and they've got to this situation now where it's becoming, you know, a lot of work, and then should I be in it, and all this sort of thing. I mean, is it, you know, I know it's different things for different businesses, but, you know, what do you think, in your opinion, is a smarter strategy? Are we looking at mergers? Are they a better idea, or acquisitions? I mean, mergers come with their own set of rules and challenges. Same with acquisitions. You know, is it possible to say that maybe a merger is better than an acquisition in your experience?
I think an acquisition is much better because of the fact that I've seen a lot of small businesses that have fallen apart literally because of issues between partners. And, you know, let's go into partnership. It sounds like a great idea. There'll be two owners, and ownership is one of the critical success factors in a small business. The number of people who think like owners is the number of, you know, that's how great the business is going to be in a lot of respects. So if you've got three or four owners, then that's fantastic. But then you've got three or four people who need to agree on the strategic direction and need to agree on a lot of decisions. And that makes it a lot more difficult. And I've seen mergers within the IT industry where, you know, and it's meant to be a merger, but there's always someone who does the merging and someone who gets merged. And often it doesn't work out well and someone's left, feeling unhappy about the entire process because of the fact that, their expectations going into the merger haven't been met, 6 months down the track. And that's a big issue. Whereas if you can say, you know what, this is my revenue. An ongoing revenue stream works quite well because it protects both people. Like when we look at opportunities, I'm happy to pay a really fair price, but probably over 2 years and based on the length with which the customers come, because I know that there's people out there who will sell a business and then after 6 months, they'll go back and approach those customers and win them back. And literally all of the value has gone from that business that was acquired. I was speaking to one customer, one IT company. They bought a company a few years ago and little did they know that the guy had done it 3 times previously. Sold his company, taken 6 months off, then just walked into those customers again, took them all back and continued on his merry way. So you want to, if you're buying a company, you want to minimize your risk. And if you're selling your company, you want to maximize the profit that you get. And I think some sort of open book policy, where the value is spread out over a couple of years, that makes a lot of sense.
So, I mean, from what you've seen, do you say that on average, the mergers and acquisitions work, or they generally tend to fail as an average if you look at all of them? What's your general feel of that?
Well, the apocryphal number that they sort of throw around is that 80% of M&A activities end in failure or have a negative result for shareholder returns, which is quite a scary figure. So that's why we're very cautious with the ones that we do. We did one probably about 6 years ago now, a small dev team. We wanted to move into the dev space. We were their second largest customer. We'd been working with the guy for probably 3 years. We knew him, we trusted him, and he still is in the company today. Because, and I think that's a great thing is if you know the company, if you've seen them, if you've done work with them, then you've got a bit of an idea about how they operate. And that's one of the good things about, organizations like SMB IT Pro, you get to know someone in a non, hey, I would like to sell my business type environment. You get to see what they're like and get an understanding of what they are. And that's another way that you can increase value because when you de-risk the transaction, then the value goes up.
Well, I think that again, that's what we're coming to. It would seem to me that you're going to improve your chances of success by knowing, the businesses beforehand and understanding them and again, being involved with them. And I think that the case is that you need to be thinking about that, as you mentioned before, early on in the case. So if you're a one-man band or a small-man band, you really should be looking at this end value, what you're trying to achieve. That's what the Simon Sinek of this world talk about. It's the why. It's not the how or the what. It's the why. Why are you doing what you're doing, And then this is how I'm going to achieve this. And I think that so many people now haven't actually sat down and thought about that. And when push comes to shove or when they need to make a decision, they're making it with lack of information, not enough time to make consideration. It's something that you should be looking at all the time. It's one of the lessons I learned is looking at this and saying, why am I doing this and what am I trying to get out of it? And, your nest egg, or what am I trying to build here and how am I going to go about that? And I think so many people just, to me, seem to be doing this randomly. I don't know, I just keep doing it. Or what's your direction? Why aren't you doing, I don't know, I should do this and I should do that. And it's all very, very unfocused to me, and that's just, again, means that you're never really going to achieve what you want, but it also sets you up, I think, for the situation where you have a untoward event or something unexpected happens and that really wipes you out completely because you've just got no solid foundation to stand on. I mean, again, is that a fair comment of what we're seeing out there?
Absolutely. People need to have their the eye on the exit strategy, and they need to understand what it is that they're doing. And our transformation probably started 10 years ago when I was doing my MBA, and there was an article in Harvard Business Review that looked at industry profitability. If you want to have to be in the most profitable industries, then you'll either do illegal arms dealing or drug trafficking. They are the highest return industries out there. Now, obviously, it was actually a graph of industry returns versus risk. They were right. They were to the top and to the right, because you know there's a huge amount of risk in drug dealing, but the returns are really good. Then at the other end, you've got things like airlines, which are notorious for destroying capital, and very few airlines are profitable year after year after year. When you think about MSPs, now incidentally, when you go into when you come back to legal industries, the two highest were software development and pharmaceuticals. Now, and I was thinking, you know what? I know very little about pharmaceuticals, but from being an MSP, or we were break fix back then, to software development, it's not too far to make that step. And that's where we started to look at software development, and literally spent the last 10 years in building up a software dev practice, because of the fact that, you know, literally every day you go along and you're playing a game, and those rules are set by the industry that you're in. Why would you play a game where the returns are a lot lower?
And I think also too, it's again, the statement that I always come back to is the Mark Andreessen one, you know, software will eat the world. I mean, read that, you look through a search on the interweb for that and find it and read that through. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's not about hardware anymore. It's really about the software.
Absolutely. And so, you know, and so our MSP practice is still like, we've looked for different areas to extract value out of what it is that we do. And that's why we still have an MSP business, because it gives us a lot of competitive advantage when we're trying to execute on our overarching company strategy. You know, the ability to be able to, when you're developing software products, the ability to ring up a small business owner who knows you and trusts you and say, hey, can I buy you a coffee? And I want to talk about this problem that you have in your business for an hour, and you know, I'm doing market research. That's gold. In a software, most software dev houses don't have that luxury, and there's a huge amount of value to be had in that, and we leverage that really aggressively in the products that we build.
Yeah, and I think again, part of it is you talk about is a bit of a mindset change. I think that in any industry, if you do something for too long, I mean, things are just going to change on you. And I think that we're not seeing, you know, the longer that you wait to make the transition, the bigger the gap, you know, that you've got to make, the bigger the jump is. And I think that it's getting now to a point where people are, you know, maybe trying to jump and they're failing because it's just become such a large void that they've got to get across to get to that next level. And again, that creates the despondency and the more stress and all this sort of stuff on the thing. And I mean, are we at the point now where it is too difficult to do? I mean, is it becoming, as a percentage term, too difficult to either grow your MSP business or merge it or acquire other businesses, do you think?
I think the time is drawing near where you really need to have a good hard think about what you're doing. I mean, when I look at the kind of things that we do on a day-to-day basis that we didn't do 3 years ago, it's kind of shocking. Like, you know, there's video creation, there's email marketing, there's, you know, graphic content for Facebook ads, there's, you know, knowledge management products, you know, things like Confluence, all of those sort of things. If you haven't, you know, there's a lot of effort to get a skill set around those. And if you haven't built them up yet, then, and you're literally still running as an MSP, because we offer all of these features to our customers and they go, wow, it's, you know, that's a wide range of features. And because what we've done is we've redefined what IT is. We've taken a lot of things that are traditionally non-IT and we said, you know what, we can do them and we can do them better than the people whose that domain is, because we use IT to make it awesome. And that's the, you know, that's what I think is our secret sauce, is that, you know, like if you look at marketing, marketing's okay, but a lot of people are stuck in the old days where, you know, let's produce a catalog, whereas IT can do some incredible things when you marry it up with traditional marketing. So that's one of the things that we do. if you're just a straight out MSP, then it's becoming, I think it's becoming increasingly difficult to retain customers, because people, you know, a lot of small business owners are talking, and we know that we've got, like, we get word of mouth referrals, and they say, so do you guys really do this kind of stuff? And it's like, yeah. Why? What do you need a hand with? And you sit down with them and you explain something to them that's not really or traditionally small business IT related. And they go, our IT company never talked to us about that. And it's like, well, you know what? There's a lot of those old MSPs out there, you know, but it's up to you. It's how you want to grow your business. And they come across to us because of the fact that we can offer them a range of tools to help them grow their business. And so if it's easy for us to acquire new customers, and literally the one thing holding us back is hiring, if we could find more awesome engineers, we would be marketing a lot more, because the marketing's pretty easy. Then if it's easy to acquire customers, why would I go out and buy a business? I can just get them through attrition, which means that there's no value in purchasing a business. And literally, I think it's going to become a lot more like it is in Silicon Valley, where they do these things called acqui-hires, where they'll see a dev team of five that's produced an awesome product, and the company that acquires them doesn't like the product. They'll shut it down, but they'll pay, you know, a good sum just to get those people to come on board. And literally, it's a golden handshake to come on board.
Yeah, okay. So, again, if you're listening and you're a standard style MSP that we've talked about, maybe 1-2 man operation, relatively small, traditionally done the technical things, you're getting a bit of sense that the winds are changing, that things like Azure and Office 365 and Amazon and those sort of things are coming and potentially eating into your market. Your customers are looking, asking you questions like things that you can't do. So they're maybe asking you about Power BI or integration for websites and web hosting. And again, you feel the wind of change, or you know that you've got you change your business model. You know, what sort of steps should I be taking, do you think? I mean, obviously you sit down and you consider it, but, you know, what sort of direction should I be taking? Should I be looking to get big, get fast? Should I be looking to specialize? I mean, obviously it depends on why you want to achieve things in your business. But, I mean, what sort of the next step, once you have this realization that, you know, this MSP thing may not be working out the way that other people have been talking about?
Well, I think you either transform your business model to one that is going to be more profitable, or you start networking like crazy and, you know, try and find a potential acquirer and, you know, have a realistic – and it's one of the things, you know, every time someone wants to sell their business, you know, the seller thinks that it's worth X and the acquirer thinks that it's worth, you know, a quarter of X. You need to have a realistic expectation. And, you know, work out a plan that sort of fits with your, you know, if you're 55 or 60, then transforming the business is probably not going to be your first thought. It is probably going to be to get acquired. So, and it's things like, you know, making sure that the financials are, you know, look good, and you can paint the company in the best possible way.
And I think part of it is the way I would define it is, and again, I think everybody should be doing this, but you need to be adding value to your business every single day. So you need to be looking at it saying, if what I'm doing today is adding more value to my business, whether it's more revenue or more customers or better processes or more efficiency or removing the expenses, at the end of the day, profit is revenue less expenses. So you need to look at it and be saying, how am I adding value? And I think the important step there is you need to look at that observation outside your business. And that's very difficult for most business owners to do. So part of it may be is you need to get an independent third party who can come in and say, you know what, why do you do this? Why is this value? Why are you paying for this? And look it over and actually go through potentially pretend acquisition so that you get some reality put into, you know, your thought process. Because again, I agree with you. I think a lot of people think that the value of their business is astronomical. I mean, I know people that have valued their company at $3 or $4 million, and again, they get get $1,000 for it. It's just unrealistic. And I think having that external opinion, look over your business, asking you the difficult questions, can be very eye-opening.
Well, yeah, you know, like we employ 18 people and we are so far from $3 million that it would be unimaginable to get to that. I would have thought, you know, on the kind of values that are getting done now, you know, so anyone who's thinking that they're
Yeah,
worth
exactly.
$3 million, you know, wow, that would be a really, really big company.
But it's interesting that the discussion that we had that I've had with that, they honestly, to their core, believe their business is worth that or more. They can't justify it, they can't prove it, they can't pragmatically, you know, show you. But they've got some sort of inbuilt belief that that's what it's worth. And I think that that's where a reality check needs to be made for a lot of people, because I think a lot of, especially IT businesses, believe the value of their business is 10, 15, 20, 100 times more than what the market will actually pay. And you're better off finding out what the market will pay for it now than when you actually do need to sell it, I think.
Absolutely, you know, and that's the thing that, you first off, I think you need to have an understanding that the market is changing and it's changing dramatically. You need to think about where your profit drivers are. I mean, we used to make a lot of money selling servers. You know, we used to make a lot of money selling MYOB terminal servers. You know, that was a river of cash for us, but we just don't do that much of that anymore. You know, so as a consequence. You know, product sales is down, projects are down, or, you know, server implementation projects are way down. What we've been lucky enough to be able to do is that we've had an upswing in software projects. We also develop projects internally for ourselves, and I think that makes a big difference. We've got one website that gets 180,000 visits per month. And so when we go to talk to people about online marketing, we can say, you know, just get someone who does a lot of online marketing. We've got a website that's nearly 200,000 visits a month. How does that compare? And that, because when like online is a bit of the Wild West out there. There's a lot of cowboys and there's a lot of people who don't really know. You know, they use Facebook a lot and they like to share photos of cats that look like Hitler, but they don't really understand deeply online marketing. So you've got to sort of work out what your strategy is going to be. And literally, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You've got to be realistic as to what your company's worth.
And part of it is that, again, I think the important separation here is between, you know, your business and you, people as an individual. I think too many people basically have meshed the two, where their personality, their self-worth is tied up in their business. So they feel they're worth $3 million for all the amount of time and effort they've put in over the years. That gets translated into the business entity, which really is just a shell and it's not worth anything at all. So I think that's the real mental step that people have to make, is to actually separate them from their business and look at the business as its own entity, and typically an entity that at some stage needs to be sold off, or, you know, to get the return on investment. Because again, you can build it up, but you don't actually make the money, you know, the capital gain, until you actually sell that business. And in many cases, most people think, oh, that's naturally going to happen. I'm going to get $3 million plus for that down the track. Don't worry about that. But again, I think that's, again, abdicating a lot of that sort of responsibility. And if that's your goal, you really need to work that and move that and keep adding value. And that's what I don't think a lot of people are doing, unfortunately.
No, I mean, it's all well and good to say that you think it's worth $3 million, but at some stage an accountant's going to come in and they're going to have a look at the P&L and they're going to go through every line item and question you on it. And, you know, and they're going to ask questions like, you know, do you have contracts? Now, it's one of the issues that we have here. We're not in the medium term planning on selling Extreme Networks. We don't have contracts. Our customers use us because they love us. We've had customers for, you know, we've been in business for 15 years, and I can probably think of, you know, three or four customers that we've had for the entire 15 years that we've been out there. And that's one of the selling points. Hey, we don't have a contract. You know, we'll look after your servers if, you know, we've got all of these value adds, and you'll use us because you love us, not because we've got some crappy piece of paper that says that if we stuff up, you still have to use us for another 11 months. Now, that's been a deliberate decision because that's one of the selling points that, you know, hey, try us for a couple of months. You know, see what you think. Most of them are, you know, they normally know someone who's looking after us anyway. So it's a fairly, we try and de-risk that transaction for them, you know, so that they're fairly confident that they're going to have a good experience when they move across to us. But if anyone was to come and have a look at us and they say, show us your contracts, it's like, oh, we've got a couple of contracts with bigger customers, but literally they're very short-dated contracts because we don't like to lock them in. And they go, well, we want locked-in customers. They're like, well, we don't have that. And so if you don't have that's one of the things that negatively affects the value of our company. But at the end of that, it doesn't really make that much of a difference because a lot of those contracts are breakable anyway. You don't really want a customer who vehemently doesn't want to be using you, particularly if it's an all-you-can-eat contract. You know, it's quite easy for them to get you to sack them. All they need to do is ring 15 times a day. And a lot of people don't really understand that, you know, that those contracts, you know, there's some value in them, and definitely it helps you when you're trying to sell a business. But it's, you know, customers can and do break them. The other thing that I think is really important about mergers and acquisitions, particularly if you've got staff, is the cultural fit. You know, how do you do things in your business? How do they do the things in their business? Is there, you know, how do they think about their customers? How do they treat each other? Because that is one of the things that I find that's where it can bring things undone, is when there's a significant cultural mismatch.
And I think that's something that people underestimate, is, you know what, companies are run by people, every person's an individual. And if you're looking to leverage those individuals, then again, there's a lot that you need to do to make sure that A, you retain them, but B, that they're the face of your company and they continue to add value and provide good service to the customers. And that's, I think, the hardest thing to do, especially in the SMB space, because typically the SMB space in IT is going to be limited. You know, you're not doing some of the high-end multi-server, multi-network, that sort of thing is typically not what you see in the SMB space. So if you're an employee, you know, they're generally, you would look at it and think, you know, there's going to be a threshold for me. I'm going to learn so much, but then if I want to go to the next level, I'm going to have to move on. So I don't think a lot of people look at that. So, you know, once I've, all the effort that I've got to get a good employee, bring them up to speed, if there's not a career path for them, or if they don't feel they can keep growing, then eventually I'm going to lose this individual and then I'm going to have to go through this whole process again. And that's just costing me money.
And I think that's one of the challenges in running a professional services business. If you talk to someone in manufacturing, all of their capital is in big machines that cost a lot of money, and the person who operates it is really just a cost, you know. And if he doesn't want to do that, then you can just get someone else to do that. Our capital walks out of the door every night, and we have to hope that they come back the next day. That makes it. You know, the kind of money that a manufacturing company spends on maintenance of their equipment, that's the kind of money that we spend on maintenance for our team. And that's one of the other things that I think, you know, can create significant value, is if you've built a good cohesive team and that you can come up with a way of transferring that to another company.
And I think that's probably, again, one of the biggest challenges is because if you've built a good business, it's typically reflective of your personality, your style, your leadership. Again, how's that going to work going forward if you go into mergers and acquisition? Now, if you merge and then maybe you go to sales and your engineering team goes off to work with under somebody else, or likewise, if you exit the business with an acquisition or whatever, again, that can cause a lot of disruption to the staff and you can lose that cohesiveness, which you've worked so hard to achieve, and a lot of that intrinsic value that's been part of that new entity. So again, that's a complete, you know, a complete thing that a lot of people are probably overlooking, is that the effect that it will have on this hopefully well-oiled machine that you already have in place.
Exactly. You know, are the staff going to have to go to a new office? How far is that going to be for them extra to travel? What's the bonus structure like at the new place? What about entitlements? Do they transfer across? Who will they be reporting to? What's their new manager going to be like? You know, do they treat customers differently to the way that other companies treat them? All of those sort of things mean that, you know, what's the M&A going to be like 12 months down the track? you know, how many of those staff are going to be there. And so that's where the real trick is in any sort of M&A is making sure that those people come across and that they're happy and that they understand why it's being done and that it's going to be net in the long term beneficial for them.
Yeah, and look, unfortunately, I think we could spend hours and hours and hours going over this and going into the culture and all that, but I think we do need to round it up, obviously, for this episode. Happy to get James on and maybe go a bit more in depth about the cultural side of it, some more of his experiences. But what I will ask James to do now is if you want to, for us, just if you can summarise what we've been talking about, give us some, you know, some steps or some strategies or some information or how we can go about dealing with this if we are affected by this. And then obviously, if you can let us know how people can get in contact with you, follow what you're doing, keep up to date, if they've got any questions or any follow-ups they'd like to make of you.
Yeah, so the first thing I would do is have a good hard think about what it is that you want to achieve in your business. You need to be crystal clear on that. You then have to have a realistic plan about how you're going to achieve that. And if you don't think that the way that the IT industry is going, then you need to change something, whether that's an exit, whether that's a change in business plan. But if you honestly appraise it, then you'll get the right answers by going through that process. And it's not a simple process to go. It might take you 3 months to have a good hard think about that. You need to communicate with the stakeholders, you know, whether it's your wife, whether you've got partners, or husband for that matter. Customers as well, you know, what do they think? And then if it is an exit, you need to sort of start looking out for the kind of person or the kind of company that you want to be acquired for. Have a think about what kind of valuation you're after and then try and de-risk it for the person who wants to acquire you. If you're doing the acquiring, you know, always look for ways that you can maximize the return for the person who's going to sell you their business. They've put a lot of blood, sweat and tears into that business. How can you give them the highest value possible whilst accepting the least risk possible? So that would be my advice. That's the way that we sort of try and run those sort of processes. So to see what we do, you can go to the website, extremenetworks.com.au. Follow us on Facebook. We are fairly active on Facebook and we use it, as I said, we use it to try and drag or to get people to come along to interviews, and that worked extremely well because it enabled us to show what our culture's like. And if you've got any questions, you can ping me an email, jeeling@extremenetworks.com.au. That's J-E-L-I-N-G.
Okay, so I'll get James to send me through any of the details there so that we can put it in the show notes for this episode. But as always, I thank our guest for coming on and sharing his insight. I think there's been a huge amount of business value there, and I do encourage you to have a look at what James is doing and get in contact with him if you have any further questions. I'm pretty sure that we could encourage James to come on again and continue the discussion and get a bit more into the weeds around the culture side of it, given the success he's had with his business. So again, I thank James very much for your time on this episode today.
No worries. Thanks, Robert. It's been great.
Excellent. No problems. All right. Well, I'm going to round off from the Computer Information Agency here. You can find information about what I am and what I do at my website, www.ciaops.com. Remember, the Need to Know podcast features information for business and IT professionals. If you've got an interest and maybe want to come on and speak to me, then please get in contact. Otherwise, please suggest some topics. Happy to cover those as well, whether they're technology or business related. So again, thank you everyone for listening and look forward to the new episodes. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint Online and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.